Welcome to Evolutions Per Minute. I'm your host, Dan Seif, and this is the podcast that explores the connection between hip-hop and jazz. These two art forms, created by Black American artists, share a lot of the same DNA, but the stories of how they're connected haven't really been told. So many hip-hop songs sample jazz records, and in most cases, the jazz and hip-hop artists have never even met. Each episode of Evolutions Per Minute, I will bring together these jazz and hip-hop artists for the very first time to talk about these two styles and learn about how these genres are related. This is Evolutions Per Minute. This is a unique episode of Evolutions Per Minute. I played bass and guitar on this record, which is Keith Murray's Candy Bar, and it was produced by DJ Khalil, and featuring Patty Austin, who met for the first time in this interview.
There's the emotion on that record and how you sang it. It's the most beautiful. You have one of the most beautiful voices, period.
Oh, God. Like, thank you so much.
And in your tone, everything, the texture of your voice.
This episode of Evolutions Per Minute is going to be different than the others in a couple ways. First, because it's not about a sample. The hip-hop song featured in this episode was a recreation of the original and not a sample. I'll get back to that part later. The other thing that makes it different is that I am playing bass and guitar on the hip-hop song. I also hired the horn players, who are friends of mine, jazz musicians. And the song I played on is called Candy Bar by Keith Murray, and it was produced by Grammy Award-winning producer DJ Khalil. Khalil has worked with Dr. Dre, Eminem, Jay-Z, Kendrick Lamar, Drake, and the list goes on and on. This song, Candy Bar, uses a song called Havana Candy by the amazing singer Patty Austin.
Like a chocolate candy bar, and she can get from here to that without any help. No, thank you very much.
When
you walk on
beach, when a producer wants to use part of an old record as a sample, they have to get permission and pay a fee to whoever owns the recording, and that's usually not the artist, but the record label that originally recorded the song. In some cases, the owner of the music doesn't want it used, or sometimes they charge so much that no one can afford to use it. And that's what happened in this case, and that's why DJ Khalil ended up recreating the song instead of sampling it. The funny part is, he tried to find someone to sing Patty Austin's part and couldn't make it work. Finally, someone from the label was able to arrange for Patty Austin herself to come back in and re-sing her own part. Just like with the other episodes, Patty Austin and DJ Khalil had never met prior to this interview, and this is the story of how Patty Austin's Havana Candy became Keith Murray's Candy Bar, produced by DJ Khalil. So let's start with Ms. Austin. What do you remember about the song Havana Candy and how you came up with it, how you recorded it?
What do I remember about that song? Well, let's see. It was on CTI. There was a generation of musicians that came up during that period, that a lot of them were fresh out of Berkeley. A lot of them had parents who were musicians. They were coming of age themselves, and they were throwing themselves into the work field as a result of some interconnections they had. But none of that mattered. You had to get there and produce and do, you know, you had to be a badass. At that time, we all worked together in many different aspects of the music business. We did our own projects. We did each other's projects. We did other people's projects. I was doing studio work at that time, so I was singing on other people's stuff. When Mike and Randy got ready to do their album, they called me to sing backgrounds on it, and they called a guy named Luther Vandross to do the vocal arrangements. And we were all out there at the same time. And it was a very magical time to be in the music business in New York. 1650 Broadway was on fire all the time. If you weren't running into Bill Withers, you were running into Ralph McDonald and the guys at Antesia, Grusin, Bob James, all of those people, the CTI squad. They were all hanging out together, making music together. And one of the guys that was with Antesia heard a bunch of songs that I had written in my teens. I guess it was like 17 or 18 when I wrote Havana Candy. I had never written anything before, but my beloved godfather, I'm going to wave my godfather winky at everybody, is Quincy. And he said at that time, you got to start writing, because I wasn't writing anything at that time. And it was the time when Carole King and all the great female, Judy Collins, Joni Mitchell, not so much in the black market, but more in the white girl market, there was a lot of original composition and singing, singer-songwriters were happening. And Quincy said, you got to write. And I said, I've never written before. I didn't even know how to start. He said, take a note from every song you know, put them together, you'll have a different song. You will have written a song. Wow. And I said, okay. Wow. He said, because there's only so many notes in a scale, and you're going to be repeating somebody's stuff at some point in time. Don't be shy. Hmm. Go in, listen to everything, and kind of put it together like a puzzle. Hmm. And so those were his writing instructions. Later on, when I worked with the wonderful James Ingram, James used to be able to listen to any song and tell you what the components were that created the new product. Oh, that's the first 8 bars of blah, blah, blah. And that's the bridge from blah, blah, blah. And they took that ending from Beethoven's Fifth. You know, very aware of how you create a tapestry out of music. So there was tremendous camaraderie. There was, like I said, working together, creating together. And that's what I remember most about that time. Mm-hmm. Now we all have gray hair and we're a bunch of old farts going around patting each other on the back for what back we have left. That's it.
So, Khalil, can you tell us about how you put this song together, how you found Havana Candy, the whole story behind the making of Candy Bar?
I mean, well, first of all, to hear you talk about like CTI, I mean, that's like incredible to me, because like as a producer, you know, as a beat maker back then, I wouldn't even say I was a producer yet, but I was a beat maker, and like CTI Records became really popular among producers because of like Bob James and everybody sampled Nautilus. That was like, you know, so every time you saw CTI, you bought those records, right? So my dad, you know, my dad played in the NBA for 10 years. So like all his best friends were musicians, you know.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Yeah, like Les McCann and O.C. Smith. So, you know, I grew up around, you know, musicians and stuff. And so when I started sampling, I started digging through his records and I started seeing like CTI records. So when I started buying my own records, you know, after I was using all his stuff, I came across one of your records, and I already knew I was already a big fan, because my dad schooled me on everything Quincy Jones. So I already knew, you know, your name, some of my favorite songs. You were the lead vocalist on, you know what I mean? Bet You Wouldn't Hurt Me. Like I still play that song to this day. That's like one of my favorite songs.
You and every musician I know, by the way.
Hmm. Yeah. That song is.
What is it with you guys in that song? It doesn't matter what show I'm doing. The band will eventually say, why aren't we doing Bet You Wouldn't Hurt Me?
There's the emotion on that record and how you sang it. It's the most beautiful. You have one of the most beautiful voices, period.
Oh, God. Like, thank you so much.
And in your tone, everything, the texture of your voice, your backgrounds are incredible. Like I was a fan. I was a huge fan. So when I was in the Pasadena Swap Meet, I used to go first Sunday of every month. And I found Havana Candy. I found the record and just digging. I was like, I didn't even know you had a record on CTI. This is before I didn't even know you had previously released records. You know what I mean? Before Quincy, I didn't know that catalog. So.
Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And my ritual was to like, I would bring my records back and I would like clean. I worked out in my mom's back house. This is when I was still living at home. So I was cleaning the back house and put the record on, and Havana Candy comes on. And, you know, and I'm just like, wait, and I already have my sample ready. So as soon as that She Looks Like a Movie Star, I was like, oh, I'm making something out of that right now. Because like back then, having like a lyric in your beat that was already like catchy was like the thing to do, you know what I mean? Like that was automatically like you could get a single on somebody. So, you know, and really I was just listening to the because I'd never heard you sing like that, right? I'm used to the ballads, I'm used
that's funny.
You know, it was such a character, like you were like in a character, and I was like, I never heard you sing like that. And when that part came up, I was like, that is so catchy. So when I looped it, I was like, okay, I'm putting this on my next beat CD, right? And it was just an interlude. I didn't even put it on like a full, it wasn't even a full thing. It would play for like maybe 30 seconds on this beat. Like I would make it like an interlude on my beat CD, right? And I bought a broken Rhodes from a friend of mine for like $100. So I tried to replay the chords. I didn't know what I was doing. I was just trying to like replay the chords on that part. So anyway, I finish it. You know, I just send the CD out. It's literally just an interlude. I didn't even think anybody would like it. And I got a call from my friend who was working for Def Jam. He was consulting for Def Jam. And he was like, yo, this interlude, like I think Keith Murray wants to use it. I'm like, and Keith Murray, he was a very popular MC, but I think he had gone to jail or something. And then he was getting out of jail. So they were like, this is going to be his comeback single.
Oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And and so that's, you know, so then I'm getting calls from Def Jam. I'm getting calls from Eric Sermon, who's like, you know, he's the one that signed Keith Murray, and they're just going crazy over the beat. And that's kind of like how it happened there, you know. And there was another group out of Canada who wanted the beat too. And so we went through this back and forth with them because they had bought the beat first. My manager at the time was not feeling that, and Def Jam was threatening me. It was a whole mess.
Oh boy.
That I got caught in the middle of. But, you know, anyway, it ended up going to Keith Murray. We ended up doing it, but we couldn't clear the sample at that point. So I guess they called you to come and sing it, re-sing, and I had to replay it. Yeah, so, and I had never really done, I guess I hadn't really done a replay like that, especially like with a, because that vocal is so unique that like it's no one else, only you could do it. Like no one else could pull that off. You know what I mean? So the fact that you were, you know, willing to do it was incredible, and that we got a chance to work with you. I mean, it's like even that session was a blur, you know, for me. Like I don't remember all the details of it, but I just remember like, you know, we already had the song. The song's already done. We had to redo your vocals and we had to like replay it. So I had some musicians come in and help replay it. And that was like, it was a challenge for me, but it was like obviously gratifying to work with you. You know what I mean? And to have you actually re-sing it. So that was kind of like my side of the story in terms of like how it got to that point where it got to Keith Murray and it became a single. There's a video for it and everything. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
no.
There's a video. Yeah, there's a I have to send it to you. You'll get a kick out of it. It's pretty amazing.
So, Miss Austin, what are your thoughts about this piece of music you made, Havana Candy, and the journey that it took to become this other song and you coming back and re-singing it? I mean, how does that make you feel? What are your thoughts about that?
When I did the vocal over again, I was a little bit worried about it. Imagine what I had done before, because I was about 20 years older than I was when I had originally recorded it.
Right.
And, you know, as you get older, your voice gets lower.
Right.
You go into what I call Joni Mitchell territory, which I happen to love. You know, it sounds like right. Just marinated in some juice. But right. And I find when I listen to myself, stuff that I did back then, now I'm like, oh, God, what a squeaky little person she was. So I had that in the back of my head. About doing it over. And I was just totally surprised. But when I approach any piece of music, I don't approach it like a song. I approach it like a script for a movie.
Yeah.
And the lyrics is the script. And that's what I become the character of the lyric in the script.
Wow.
And whenever I'm teaching a masterclass, that's what I'm always telling my students. If you don't believe what you're singing about, I'm not going to believe what you're singing about. Mm. So you have to create a whole backstory, a character, everything in your mind, especially for that kind of song. And I wrote it from a very theatrical point of view in the first place. Because I guess the first thing I did as an entertainer when I was a kid was theater. So that's always in the back of my head. You know, if I'm writing a song, it's going to be in the middle of a Broadway show or in the middle of a movie musical, or it's underscoring for a scene. And so that's the way I try to project it. And a lot of contemporary singers don't think that way. It's really kind of an old school mentality. You know, you sing the songs that are most about who you are. So when you go in, you know, you go in to give that lyric a reading, it's truer, you know, because it resonates with you internally. So I just had this whole character that I had created in my head of this girl that was just kind of a sassy Latina. And, was not taking any crap from anyone. So So I had to kind of put that attitude into it. Now, maybe if I had been able to work with who you were trying to get to replace me, you little bastards, I would have given her all of my trade secrets and said, no, go. It's one of my joys. One of the things I love to do is to work with younger singers with that aspect in mind. Yeah. But I love the mixing of the genres, because I have found that the whole hip hop rap music has grown so much from its origins, and so much more jazz is in it. I've always been praying for that infusion to take place, because I know it's just going to make the roux richer, you know, and it does, and it has, and it's getting better and better. I love it when things are great, but I love it when they get greater with time, because you discover more avenues. And in the words of Quincy, more places to steal good material from. So this is the whole thinking of combining the genres in any way is just very powerful. You know, I'm waiting for some classical energy to hit the hip hop rap market.
Yeah.
Because I think that's just going to take it over the moon.
Yeah.
You know, and more African influence and more Latino influence. Yeah. And just it needs to be representational of what the world is becoming and has been becoming the last 20 years, which is beige. Everybody going to be beige eventually. Yeah. So, which means we're all going to be drawing on different cultures. Yeah. And so our music needs to reflect that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think sampling for me, like that was my education, like in music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's literally how I learned. I didn't grow up playing the piano. You know, I grew up DJing, and that was like how I got into it. So DJing led to me producing, and, you know, I wanted to be like DJ Premier and Pete Rock and like all my heroes, Marley Marl, Dr. Dre, you know what I mean? So, you know, but you know, all that music that I listened to, like finding your record, you know, I'm internalizing that. And over the years, like, I mean, I've been doing this for, I don't know, over 25 years now, you know what I mean? But it's just like, after listening to all these records, you know, and I'm internalizing all this music now, you know, we're making our own samples, you know, and you have producers that are picking up instruments and that are studying these records and the craft and like, of all the great producers and arrangers. And I feel like it's going back to that. It's actually, to me, hip hop is leading back to actual, you know, just music and arrangements and real talent. And I'm so like excited to where it's going. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, you know, I have so many friends that are making incredible music and they're not sampling records. They're literally making stuff that like, I want to sample that, you know?
Right.
So it's really, It's a really exciting time, I think, for music. I think, like, you know, obviously the stuff that's popular, you know, it is what it is. But under the surface, I feel like there's a whole other movement of musicians and creatives that are really trying to recreate and expand on what, you know, on that era of music that you're referring to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that era of music, the interesting thing about that era was it was also kind of a culmination. It had come to a place in its development where it had, you know, jazz had every musical infusion imaginable by that time, by the 80s. Yeah. You know, it had explored everything. It explored everything so much that it became smooth.
Right.
And we used to say, where's the rough jazz? We need some rough jazz.
Rough jazz.
Please, enough with the smooth. Good God.
Right.
So it's interesting to see that same thing happen with this genre and to be able to, you know, I love the cross-generational things that are happening between the forms. You know, Miles had so much to do with the acceptance in the world of jazz of the pop genre.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, I'm going to cover a Cyndi Lauper tune. And y'all need to shut up and check it out because it's a great tune. Okay.
Right.
And let's not be a purist and a moron and say, oh, that's not jazz. Well, I'm going to make a jazz.
Right.
And you are making the music that you're making from all of these components, but it's still something that you've made. Yes, you're using ingredients from a lot of different styles, but that's cool. You know, I remember people getting very upset when their stuff got sampled. And I'm like, well, what's the difference between taking 8 bars from my record and taking 8 bars from Beethoven?
Mm.
What's the difference? He's just not around to complain. Right. So it's like, that's how are things going to grow unless they integrate into each other?
Yeah.
And if we can't do it with music, I don't know how we're going to get to do it in other aspects of our lives.
Yeah.
Amen.
That's great.
That's been given to us as a gift, and to create joy and to underscore aspects of our life that are not always happy. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very powerful medium. And if we get into segregating how we make music, we got a problem.
So there you have it, the unique story of how Patty Austin's Havana Candy became Keith Murray's Candy Bar, produced by DJ Khalil, with Patty Austin herself re-singing her own part. If you want to keep up with the guests in this episode, you can follow Patty Austin on Instagram at @officialpattyaustin, and you can follow DJ Khalil on Instagram at DJ Khalil. You've been listening to Evolutions Per Minute. I'm your host, Dan Seif. Tune in for more episodes of this podcast, and don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Evolutions Per Minute is produced by Stephen Ray, Christian Brune, DJ Khalil, and Autovita Studios, and edited by Sean Hettner. If you like this podcast, you can hear me every week on my radio show, Excursions Radio, on KJAZZ 88.1 FM in Los Angeles, where I play hip-hop and jazz. You can also stream the show anywhere in the world at kkjz.org. You can follow this podcast on Instagram at Evolutions Per Minute, and you can follow me on Instagram at Chief Seif.
Produced by Autovita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.